Welcome, welcome. I'm so happy that you're here for our first coaching clinic call. Yay! this is Joanna, as you probably guessed. And our coaching clinic calls are for level two only. They're a much more intimate group. And the reason why I have these calls in the program for level two is because I really wanted to give extra time to answer questions that are coming up in your one-on-one coaching, in your groups, that, you know, just aren't fitting into the week by week at the exact moment what we're doing, you know, in the training calls. There are lots of spaces in the industry for supervision. I really think of this as almost like coaching supervision. Psychologists get supervision groups, therapists get supervision groups, but coaches don't really so much very often. But there's lots of spaces for that. There's lots of spaces to get answers about marketing, but very few spaces on, like, I am just stumped with this client. Where do I go from here? Or I keep on noticing in my client calls that I, you know, XYZ, or not sure, you know, where to go with this group that I'm facilitating, you know, whatever it is. So that's what these calls are about. They're completely led by you. You can bring forward anything inner or outer having to do with your coaching calls, your groups. And I'm going to add enrollment conversations into that too, simply because there are a lot of coaching skills and coaching pieces that come up through the sales process, at least the way that I see it. So they're completely led by you. I'm basically just going to open up the floor for questions and try to get to as many as I can. So that being said, let me get us into lecture mode here. It's star two if you've got a question for me. So what can I answer for you? What questions do you have? Heather.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
So we started a conversation in the Facebook group about coaching groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would like to follow through with that.
Yeah.
So whatever you want to add, and then I'm sure I have some additional questions as well.
Yep. I've got lots to share on it. Do you have any specific questions? You might have some after I share, but do you have any specific questions just before I kind of launch in? And for everybody, the question that Heather poses, like, if you want to do a small coaching group with, you know, two people, three people, five people, six, you know, somewhere in there, like, what's the best way to set it up to make it as effective as possible?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's essentially the question, about setting it up beforehand, setting it up within, you know, the structure of the actual sessions, and regarding setting it up beforehand, you know, I'm toying with the idea, you know, I want to be clear with my boundaries, you know, my availability, so I want to set it up beforehand, but at the same time, I want to somehow allow a little bit of flexibility for that to change in case, you know, I've got a group of people that are all like, hey, this doesn't work for us, but this does. So how to navigate that.
In terms
and then,
of learning.
Yeah, like, mm-hmm. You know, when I'm launching this out, you know, I'm doing this on Eventbrite, right? And, you know, what, like the ticketing prices. Right now I'm just like, well, maybe I'll just put up, you know, for the, because there's two components to this program I'm doing. I'm going to have a workshop in person and then coaching groups, smaller groups,
mm-hmm.
after that on the phone.
Got it. Okay.
So I'm looking at making it, you know, the workshop only after the workshop for the small groups, but I'm trying to figure out how to and when contact the people who are interested in the groups, or how to state this aspect of it, of what days and times those groups will take place, like how that's going to work for them.
Okay, got it. So some of that crosses over into marketing. So the marketing pieces I won't go deep into, because that's not the purpose of the call, but I think I'll still be able to get all of your questions answered. So first, let's just talk about setup of small groups themselves. So what I've really found in my experience is that there's a difference between a coaching program. This is a little bit semantics, but you'll get what I mean. There's a difference between a coaching program and a coaching group. Anything more than about six people is going to be a coaching program. Six and under is a coaching group. And the reason why I'm making this distinction is because once you really get more than six, and maybe you could push it to eight, but once you get into that range and above, it has less of a feel like one-on-one coaching, but in a group where everybody gets served, and you have to do more teaching, almost like we do in Sacred Depths, like you teach, and then there's questions from there, learning and that kind of thing. So I'm assuming that what you're really going for is more of that group coaching that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Because the thing is, like, once there's more people, there's just too many people to serve in that mm-hmm. way. So if you're going
Can I interrupt for a second? Uh-huh. With my specific situation, the workshop, I've taught a similar sort of workshop before, just as yoga, but now I have coaching behind me, so I'm going to integrate coaching into this as well, and I am expecting, 20 to 30 people.
Yeah,
so,
that's for the workshop, that's great. And the workshop, the way I see it, is the workshop is kind of an offering on its own, but it's also a marketing avenue into these smaller coaching groups. So that being said, I don't want to get too much into the marketing part of it, mm-hmm. but I would just fill that workshop, and then once you are in the workshop, they're in the room with you physically, they're going to be so wowed by everything that happened, I'd make the call to action into the groups from there. That way it's going to avoid confusion, are you buying this thing or that thing? And people will get to experience you and your magic and your brilliance and have a shift and a transformation at the workshop, and then you can lead them into the next level from there. Mm-hmm. So, but back to how to actually set up a coaching group. So, it's intimate. It's six or under. And what I would say is, in my experience, if it's four and under, you can do 60, you can get away with a 60-minute call. As soon as you're getting into five or six people, you're probably going to need a 90-minute call if you're looking to coach each person in the group. If it's that kind of group where each person is going to get coached on every call. Simply because it's not enough time. You want to give each person a critical amount of time. What really helps is they'll all have gone to this workshop with you, so there's going to be a foundation and a basis and a common language that they're all coming in with, and that's going to make everything much easier. But so let's say you have four people, then the way you would set it up, it'd be 60-minute calls. And again, if it's a group, sometimes with one-on-one clients, sometimes I'll stretch it out so we meet every 3 weeks. Just depends on the person and what they need. But with groups like that, no longer than meeting every 2 weeks, unless it's a holiday. But you want at least every week or every other week for consistency and connection and all of that. If it's four people, let's say 60-minute call, essentially what the call is going to look like, or how I've done it, and you can kind of, do it obviously in the way that works for you, but the way that I've done it is I'll usually spend the first 5 minutes just getting everybody grounded, doing some kind of meditation or visualization. In the meditation or visualization, I'm going to slip in a little bit of a teaching that I sense they need, just lightly, you know, maybe something about celebration or, you know, looking at fears or whatever it is, but I'll use the first 5 or so minutes to just bring everybody together as a group, get them grounded, slip in a little bit of new awareness, teaching, learning, that sort of thing. And then from there, if there's 4 people, I'm going to spend the remainder of the time. I probably give each person about 12 minutes, and they can use the 12 minutes in any way that they like, but I generally recommend, you know, don't take more than 2 or 3 minutes to ask the question, and then we'll spend the rest of the time answering or coaching on it, you know, whatever it is, and then each person would go, and I would spend the last 2 minutes with integration, and I would ask each person in the group, what are you taking away from our call today? I would remind everybody at the beginning of the group to activate law of adaptation, and I actually should have done that at the beginning of this call. So activate law of adaptation. What that means is somebody might be asking a question, you know, their business may be in a different place than you, yours, or whatever you're working on with them, right? They're in a different place, it's a different situation. But there's something in it that's going to be golden for you. So open up your ears to see how you can adapt this for yourself. This isn't just about the time that I'm focusing directly on you, right? So then at the end, you would ask for takeaways. Now, what makes all of this work a lot better is to have a prep form that each person would fill out and submit in advance of the call. I usually like to say 24 hours in advance. If it's going to be a small group like that, it can be a really nice thing to have a Facebook group with the small group and have them submit the forms into the group itself so they can all stay on top of each other, you know, where they're at. The prep form also allows them to articulate what they need without having to take up a lot of time to get there on the call, and it allows you to know exactly where they're at, what they've already accomplished, so you can dive right in that shorter amount of time with them.
Okay.
If you're doing that hour and you happen to have 3 people instead of 4, or if you're doing 90 minutes and you've got 5 people instead of 6, with the extra time, you could just give each person extra time, or after each person goes, you'd have, you know, about 3 minutes or so. You can ask the group, you know, what did you just hear that's important for you in the coaching that I just gave Joanna, or whatever it is, and that adds that extra layer of integration and adaptation for everyone.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. So just a couple of small questions. When you were talking about having a Facebook group for the small group and having a prep form through the group, so do you mean that the entire group can see each other's responses?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So that way they can understand the coaching that's happening in real time on the call. And what I always like to say to people is, like, if you have something that you just want me to know privately, you know, that you don't want the whole group to know, just email me separately. But it also allows for more connection so that it's not just a bunch of random people that you happen to be coaching on the same call. That's just cheaper than one-on-one coaching, right? But you're creating a community, you're creating a connection, you're creating a support group. Oftentimes the other things, and you see how it goes with the group, but the other thing that you can do is, you know, if you want people can become accountability buddies too in the group also. And you know, depending on what you're doing in the group, whatever, that may make sense or not, but that's the other thing that could be interesting and useful in there. Okay.
And so what are your thoughts on the group being just for those 4 people, or in the case of this workshop, there might be multiple groups and they've met in the workshop, but they have separate individual groups. Is that kind of pushing the boundaries too much to include that all in one Facebook group? Should they remain separate?
It would be a lot of people to keep track of if you're doing the prep forms. So you can tell them, you know, you only need to read the prep forms for the people that are in your subgroup. But if you feel like it would be nice to have that, you know, slightly larger community in the Facebook group, you can absolutely do that. I just wouldn't want to give them too much extra work in that way.
Okay. And also, I just want to bring up, I liked what you said, and this can be applied to all coaching calls in a way, what you're talking about in that 5-minute grounding visualization or meditation to bring in a little bit of teaching or new awareness. I'm curious to hear a little bit more, maybe an example of what you might consider saying in the moment. What kind of awareness are you
talking about? I'll give you, how about this, on our listening call tomorrow, I'll slip that in the beginning. We'll do it because it'll take too long right now. But let me make a note of that. I will give you a full-fledged 4 or 5 minute example on the listening call tomorrow.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Let me just make that note for myself. All right. Excellent. Kendall.
Hello, Joanna.
Hi.
Hi, so thank you so much. And what I wanted to bring today was just this pattern that I'm noticing in terms of, okay, so when I'm leading someone through a longer program, I'm noticing that it's very common for them to kind of fall off the radar, and I have a hard time. It's almost like I have to bring them back into the fold. And I'm just curious if there's a, you know, obviously there's more that I could be doing or should be doing. And I, my sense is that I'm not setting that strong container at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I'm giving them too much, like I'm finding that balance between giving them freedom to kind of schedule when they feel like it's appropriate versus me kind of laying it out for them. And I'm sensing that's part of the problem, but I would love to hear your insight on that.
Yeah, yeah. I got a couple of thoughts. Let me just ask you one more question. When you say fall off the radar, is it just scheduling, or are they falling off the radar in other ways too?
Other ways too. So like just totally no longer engaging with me, not having sessions together, but not engaging kind of between sessions either.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Got it. So, of course, each person is their own, you know, like universe of person with their own resistances,
right,
and their own stuff going on. So I'll answer, you know, in general, and then if you want another time, we can also look at someone specific too.
Okay. Yes.
But in general, here are some of the things to really create, to have people not fall off the radar in longer things. So yes, first of all, as you've very astutely said, the creating the container, this is why I look at it the very beginning of Sacred Depth, do not underestimate the power of establishing a strong container. It can make so much difference. So I hear you, you know, and like we looked at, there are a couple of things to do to really create that strong container. So I want to talk about a couple of them. So first of all, the scheduling, I hear you that you want to give people freedom. I totally get that. And I want you to give them freedom too. You're not taking away their time freedom by asking them to schedule out all the calls in advance, because they can always reschedule, right? Whatever your policy is, whether it's within 24 hours or 48 hours, stuff comes up 100% for them and for you. Something might come up. So they absolutely get it. But when I can't emphasize this enough. When you can schedule out someone's entire program with them, it literally becomes, even though it's not physical, almost like the physical container, where it's like it's holding them and you and your work together. And they know that they know that they're required to show up for that,
right.
not, for you, for themselves, right? And so you can even just say to, you can explain to people when you ask them to do this, you can say, I know it might feel a little annoying to schedule an hour of calls. You don't even know what you're doing in April yet. I'm not 100% sure yet what I'm doing in April, but here's what I've really found. You know, we can reschedule for sure. You know, stuff comes up, but when we have this, then you know that you have regularity. You know that you can count on the space. You know that the space is going to be there for you, for your health, you know, whatever the person has signed up for you for, right? So that's the first piece.
Okay.
Second piece around the container setting is to call out resistance before it even comes up, right?
Mm.
So my sense is, you know, and this is why the container setting is so important, is because everybody's got resistance, right? Everybody really wants the goal that they, like, desire, the reason why they signed up with you, like, they really want it. They want to be healthier, right? They want their well-being, but they also have, excuse my language, a shit ton resistance around it, too. If they wouldn't, then they wouldn't have, you know, enrolled with you. You know, they may have done it on their own, right? And they know you have expertise where they couldn't do it on their own, but you know what I'm saying, like, So we need to kind of put these precautions in because people's monkey minds and their resistances and their fears and their it is likely to get the best of them because, and we'll look at this, you know, much more when we get into fear and resistance and all that, but I'll say this for now. If you are a human being, part of the process of growth is fear. And resistance is a byproduct of fear. So falling off the radar is classic resistance, right? So scheduling helps that, but also calling it out in the beginning does. And what I mean by calling it out in the beginning is to say, you know, we're about to do big work here together. And it's work that I know you can do, and it's goals that I feel so confident that we can achieve because X, Y, and Z, but I also know how human beings work. And the way that people work sometimes is we get scared of the things that we want most, and then we go into resistance. We either don't show up, we fall off the radar, we don't do our homework, you know, whatever your people's common resistances are, and say, so, you know, I just want to name it right here now that if that happens, it doesn't mean that our work together isn't working. It doesn't mean that you're not meant to be doing this work. It doesn't mean that anything has gone wrong. It simply means that you're a human being, and I'm going to call you out on it, and I'm going to bring you back into the fold.
Okay.
But so tell me now, what are some of the, you know, what do you anticipate is going to, you know, either a way that you may not show up for yourself here, or what is a fear that you anticipate may come up for you that would cause you to go in for resistance, right? So if you can already establish that day one, then, first of all, the client has the awareness. It's less likely to happen for them. But number two, if it does, which it certainly may, it will be so much easier to use the tools that we'll get to later in the program to bring someone, to help move someone through resistance. And these days, it happens to me very, very rarely. I mean, I can't think of last time that someone has fallen off the radar because of everything that I've been sharing with you and all of the tools in the training. But I will say if somebody does or the last time somebody did or whatever it is, I will call them out on it. You know, I will pick up the phone and I will say, you know, I haven't heard from you. Totally normal. It's okay. It happens. But I know that you really want X, whatever it is that they're working with you, right? Why are they working with you? So let's connect. What's going on here?
Mm. Oh,
how does
that.
All of that
awesome.
Land for you?
So good. So good. I love that piece about even like scheduling all in advance. It's like, duh, that seems so obvious, but
yeah,
I can totally feel how good that feels. So this is so helpful. Thank you.
You're so welcome. I'm just going to slip one more piece in there. For the people that you're already mid-program with, I would, whether they're on the radar or off the radar, I would make it, you know, a priority this week to reach out to everybody and say, hey, we're going to be scheduling out the rest of your session, right? Like, you can always reset the container, even in the middle, even if you feel like it's gone off track.
Okay. That's awesome. Okay. Yes. Thank you.
You are so welcome. All right. Let's see who's next. I just took you off mute. Your name is not coming up, but your last numbers are 0684. Who is that? 0684. I've taken you off mute. Are you there? All right, I will come back to you. Are you there? All right, I will come back to you. Let me take Kelsey. Kelsey.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
My question is about the line between therapy and coaching, because so much of what we do with this very sacred depth coaching is really get to the core of what is happening for someone. And the reason this question just came up for me is because my call right before this, I have a client who has a really deep core wound of like not enoughness and low self-worth and not self-love. And yet everything else in her life is really going well. You know, we did her values and her values are all being met. And on the surface, she's a 3 on the Enneagram. So she's an achiever and all this stuff, but this deep wound that comes from basically a narcissistic mother, and, you know, I don't have to get into the story. We keep coming back to it, and I have, you know, lots of tools around that. A lot of my work is based on self-compassion and healing this wound, but it's also like, where's the line in there about therapy? And she's had therapy, lots of therapy, so it's not like this is instead of it, but
yeah.
I'm always like, I'm tender around that line for people, and I'm wondering how you approach that.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're asking, and you're not the only one that is tender around that line. I'll tell you for me how I approach it, and then also after the new year, we'll have Rhea write on a special call. She is a therapist, and I've also trained her as a coach, and the whole call will be on this topic. What I'll share is, for me, where I feel like the scope of my coaching ends and the scope of therapy begins. The scope of therapy may begin before the scope of my coaching ends. So just where I feel like the scope of my coaching ends is if someone is inside of an active trauma, if they have past trauma that hasn't been treated, if they have a personality disorder and haven't been treated, I would absolutely work with someone with a personality disorder so long as they have been treated or are being treated. Or if the wound is so deep that even after using all of the tools that I'll share with you through the training, if like 3 months and the needle isn't moving at all, and again, it's because it goes back to there's some kind of active or triggered trauma in there that's not being treated. Mm-hmm. Is that helpful?
Yes. Yes, it's just deciphering. Yeah, so you have to wait. You have to keep using your tools until you find that they keep going back and not really making progress before you know.
So that, right. So if you don't know, right, there are certain signs that would tell you that someone is either actively in a trauma or personality disorder that's not being treated. Rhea will go through all of them, but you know, things like manic or extreme depression or acting in ways that seem really irregular and off, or talking about things that, you know, that would be a danger to themselves, right? Like things like that. But if none of that happens, and you're working with someone, and again, I'm not talking about fully healed necessarily in 3 months, right? Like, but maybe yes, maybe no, but really not only is the needle not moving, but what is really a sign for me even beyond that is that we will make forward progress, and then it's almost like this vortex where they get pulled all the way back in, and it's almost as if we haven't done any work at all, and they can't pull themselves out. Yeah. Likely there is an active something going on there. Of course, you know, it's always like 2 steps forward, 1 step back. You know, we always, regress back into our patterning. I'm not talking about that, but I'm talking more, the best, again, word I have for it is like a vortex pulls them back, and they are just so stuck and mired.
Yeah.
Is that helpful?
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a fuzzy area, but I think with this particular client that I'm thinking of anyway, it's new enough, she's new enough that I feel like we are making a little bit of progress, but there is a deep hole. And the hole, the deeper the hole, the more you get drawn back into it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The more, like the vortex metaphor is really strong. It's like, yeah, this wound is really strong. I want to be back with this person that was no good for me, and I know they're no good for me, but this is what feels good. And you're like, I guess if they can't move on from that as the thing they want to talk about every week too, that's the other sign for me.
Yes. And also, you know, some therapists would disagree with me because they employ this strategy in their therapy. So I'm not going to say this is true for all therapists at all. But one of the things that makes coaching different than therapy, I think, is that in all of my coaching, even if we do really deep inner work, we're always going to come out of it with some kind of action step. And so if we do the deep work, but the action steps are never taken, even if they don't do the full action step, but just like a little bit, you know, that's
mm-hmm.
the other piece in there. And so that's also, I think, again, you know, I won't go off on a tangent, but, if you're not already playing with that, that's a place I'd love for you to play. And your coaching is even when you go deep, even when there is that wounding, come out, you know, get the breakthrough and then create action steps around
okay.
it. All right?
Yep.
And
action steps are like, okay, so we got this breakthrough. Now here's some ways to keep practicing this or to keep this as
exactly.
an awareness or an inquiry. Okay.
Yeah. Yes. Practice this, deeper work around it, you know, take a little risk, a tiny little risk around. We'll get to what that means. You know, just take this little tiny step, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great.
Okay. All right.
Perfect. Thanks.
Great question. Yeah. So star two. Who's got questions? What can I help you with? What's going on with your clients? I'm going to 0684. I've taken you off mute again. Oh.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm Nicole from the Netherlands.
Hi.
Hi. I'm very excited to be here. So, my question is, I think, some kind of follow-up on a question from Kelsey.
Mm-hmm.
Because I have a client who temporarily has stopped the coaching, and we both agreed it was a good decision for her because she had some health problems and some trauma to take care of. And my question is, how do we restart again when she comes back to me? How do you make a new start, or how do you handle this properly, effectively? Because, well, it seems like another contract you have to make, or maybe a new container, or restock the containers, like you said earlier. How would you handle this?
Yeah, such a great question. So first, just in terms of the logistics of contract, that can
mm-hmm.
go one of two ways. If you have in your contract that, you know, if there's an extenuating circumstance, that you can freeze the program for X amount of months, and then come back mm-hmm. to it. Like, if that's already written in the original contract, you don't need a new one.
No.
But if that's not written in, then I would create a new contract.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yes, absolutely, you need to reset the container. And so
mm-hmm.
Some of the additional ways that you would reset the container with someone like this, which, by the way, a lot of these are similar to just if you have a client that ends their contract and then maybe they don't work with you again right away and they come back into the fold, you know, this
mm-hmm.
would actually be very similar. So number one, asking them what's changed, what's shifted, what's new for them since you were
mm-hmm.
last working together, right? And really taking some time to honor and celebrate and acknowledge all that has shifted and changed. And then
mm-hmm.
from there to ask them, okay, so from this new place that you're at, what is it that you'd like to create next for yourself? Because it may
yeah.
not be what they wanted beforehand, right?
Exactly.
So
that's why I ask this question,
yeah.
because we could take a whole new step in the coaching
exactly.
with some new results maybe.
Yeah, because
yeah.
they're different, right? Because they've already shifted. So then you want to establish the goals for the coaching.
Yeah,
what is
exactly.
it that you would like to create? What is it that you'd like to achieve? How, you know, what would you like to use this for?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then from there,
yeah.
I would ask the question of, you know, so where, what are, from all that you've learned and all that you've shifted, what's going to be, what will be the resources for you? What are you really going to pull forward to achieve these new goals?
Okay.
And
mm-hmm.
then where are the places that you sense we're really going to need to work on? And you can add in to any of these questions, right? You can help
yeah.
bump them up. But that's essentially the, you know, what I would say in terms of bringing them back into the
yeah.
fold. How does that feel for you?
Thank you. I love the way you always structure your answers. I really admire that. So thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate it because I think it will help her and me as well as a coach, because sometimes things happen. The real life comes up when you coach someone and she has some really serious problems to take care of. So we both agreed it was better to stop. But, well, since she maybe will return in February or March next year, then I'm prepared because I was wondering, how do you do that? So, yeah, great answer. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're so welcome. And I'm sure this is already on your mind. But just to add, you know, it's okay also to check in with her beforehand. Not to check in, say, like, let's start
yes.
working. But definitely let her know that you're holding her and you're thinking of her. It,
yeah,
it will help.
I
it
do.
Will help bring her back. Good.
Yes, I do. I always stay in contact with my clients, although they're, well, skipping some time or needing more time because of a sick child or some taking care of their parents, and that's the way I work. So, well, it's good to know that's a good advice. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
It confirms my way of working. Thank you.
Good. Good, good. Yeah, it's a container strengthener to stay in touch that
okay.
way. Okay. Yeah, good. All right. Who else? Star 2. I know it's our first call. I really want to acknowledge the people that came forward because it's hard on the first clinic call to, you know, bring takes a certain level of vulnerability to bring forward what's happening for you in your coaching and with your clients and your case studies. So who else? Carolyn.
Hey there. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, great. So I have been running group programs for 6 or 7 years, and I also do private coaching. And in my group programs, it's, you know, you have different timing and different ability to give people feedback, and sometimes they need a little bit more. And so they have options for how to do that. But when we're in a group situation and I've got a client who is just feels so hopeless, like the world is gonna end, and oh my gosh, they feel so broke or so disillusioned or so whatever, and feel like they really don't have options,
and I giving you the idea of what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that? I mean, I think we have our yeah, I'm curious how you handle that.
Yep. So, you know, it depends on time and space. So if there's a last person coming forward, 2 minutes left on the call, I may not, you know, on the call itself, you know, just depending on timing. But in general, if someone is presenting, you know, showing up in that way, then I can pretty much guarantee you, like, 99.999999% that person is in the resistance archetype of the victim. Yeah, what just got sparked for you?
Wow. Okay. I feel like resistance is such a it's a big piece of what I'm trying to learn about right now. So can you tell me more?
Yes, absolutely. So like I said earlier, when human beings are in a process of growth, they absolutely want the goal that they want 100%, but they're scared to reach it. And when we go into fear, if the fear isn't checked, if we're not aware of the fear, if we, you know, then we're gonna have certain resistance behaviors. So for some people, like what Kendall was talking about, they go into the flake, right? They just, like, they totally fall off the radar, or they forget about homework, or they're all of a sudden totally confused, even though they're super smart people, right? For other people, they go into the judge, the archetype of the judge, and they get, like, really angry, and they get really judgy of maybe of you or other people in the group or of themselves. And other people, this is the archetype that the resistance archetype that I know best, they go into total and utter helplessness. That's really what the victim is. It's like the whole world is against me, and I have no power to change my situation right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is that ringing a bell?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's important, number one, is just for you as the coach to know that, right, that this person is – and then what's an archetype? And by the way, I'm giving you, like, a crash course on this. We'll do a whole training on this, and then our shadow retreat. You know, we'll go even more deeply into all of this. So I'm just moving through this quickly, but what's an archetype, or what happens when we move into an archetype? It's almost as if we're not in our normal state of mind and energy, but like an outside alien energy has taken over us, and we can't see through the normal grounded eyes that we normally see through. So if this client is in the victim archetype, it's like what normally makes sense to her of, like, no, it's not actually such a bad situation, or she has an opportunity to bring in a client here, you know, all that, she's not going to be able to see it because it's like this energy, it's like a zombie energy has taken over her, right? So the way to snap somebody out of that is to, first of all, have deep compassion, right? Just first on, let's talk about you as the coach and your energetics, to not be annoyed by it, to not feel like, oh, my God, she's, you know, wasting the group's time, right? We're all human. We can go into that when we leave. You know, none of that. But to first just go into deep compassion, because this person is in fear. She's just in fear. And to really love her from that place. And then from there, to lovingly call it out or bring awareness to it. So I always say with resistance, it's a three-part process. Part one is create awareness around it. Part two is normalize it. Part three is provide a solution around it. So creating awareness depends on the person and how aware they already are and your relationship with them and all of that, but generally it's, you know, I notice, Joanna, that it almost feels like the whole world is against you right now. Or I notice it feels to me, tell me if I'm getting this right, Joanna, but it almost feels like you feel like you have no options whatsoever. Like you're just at the total bottom of the bottom and there's no way out. Am I getting that right? Now, for some people, they'll just say you're getting that right, but for other people, that will already just open their eyes to like, oh, wait, what am I doing here, right? So create the awareness, and then you normalize it so that they don't feel like a freak for feeling that way, right? And you say, it is so totally normal to feel this way when you've had 5 enrollment conversations and nobody has signed on, or when you've blah, 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 or blah, blah, right? Like, I've certainly been there, right? So you just normalize it for them. And then, you know, I'm simplifying, there would be more conversation in here, but, you know, you'd ask them if they'd be willing to explore it, and you know, you can take a look at where that belief comes from and what their patterning around it is, the tendencies, and then, you know, at that point, they'll be more open to finding a solution or taking a next step. I know I just went through that very, very quickly, but tell me what you're hearing.
That is so perfect. I think the step, I'm great with the compassion. I would not get annoyed, not with the person I'm thinking of at this very moment anyway. I'm sure I have gotten annoyed before. But the bringing awareness to it, I think that first part, just saying, I notice that. That you don't feel like you have options, or, you know, because one of the things this particular client said to me is, just tell me what to do. I don't know what to do. I just don't even know what to do. I'm like, I know that's not true. Like, I know in my heart that's not true. She doesn't not know what to do. And I'm not the coach who's going to tell her what to do, because that's just not how I roll. So I think where I've been missing the step is that the bringing awareness to it in that way. I do try to normalize it, because I'll just say, yeah, been there. I get So I'm getting the middle part, but not the first and last part. So that's incredibly helpful. Thank you.
Good. And I'll just add, since you gave that specific example of, like, the someone who says, the person that says, I don't know what to do. So, you know, there's different ways or avenues you might go down to create awareness, but just to give you an example, one example, again, without knowing her full story or whatever, but one example might be, you know, Joanna, tell me if I'm getting this right. You know, one thing that I've observed about you is that you're so capable, and you're actually so connected into your knowing and knowing what to do next. But whenever we create a goal that really stretches you, it almost feels like you get a little scared, and then you don't know what to do. Am I getting that right?
Mm-hmm.
So what did I just do there? What are you observing? What did I just do?
Well, you're doing exactly what you just did in terms of creating awareness and getting her in the seat of looking for solutions.
Yes. And then also,
and also pointing out the pattern.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why it's so important to be listening on all those levels, because it will give you more fuel, you know, when you need to create a big awareness in a moment like this.
Okay. Oh, that's excellent. Thank you, Joanna.
You are so welcome. Great question. All right, I think we have time for one more question. If anyone's got one, star 2, what can I help you with? Anyone got anything else today? Star 2. All right. Who is this? Your last numbers are 0267.
That's me. This is Pamela.
Hi, Pamela.
Hey. I have a question for you. It's, I guess, about, it seems like a weird question, how our speech patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Your speech is very patient, and you have a specific speech style. And I find I'm with a lot of boys all the time, so I've learned over the years to be really clear and precise and quick, which I don't think really suits deep coaching. And now every other style feels almost fake to me, because I'm so used to be like, yep, do this now, quickly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Giving a lot of orders throughout my day to all these boys. Have you always spoken the way you do now, or did you work to cultivate it? And
I'll answer. Yes, I will answer your question, but then I have some questions for you.
Okay.
It's such a great topic that you're bringing up. So both of my parents are foreigners with two totally different but bizarre accents. And I think because of that, that's why I talk the way that I do. It's just from growing up in a house with lots of different accents. So that being said, my mind works really quickly, like most of us, you know, in this program, you know, you're smart, like it's constantly firing things off.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
So I do have to remind myself in some situations I need to even slow down more than my normal energy, right? So I do mm-hmm. have to, let me take a step back. I want you to not do anything fake, okay? Your energy, like your pacing and who you are naturally is the medicine that your ideal client needs, end of story. So
okay. That's
there. And then what I'd say, but that being said, are there moments where your nervousness or your, just because you're patterned to, you're telling your boys things in a certain way, where you're actually going faster than what your rhythm would dictate, and where and this is really important for coaching. Sometimes as coaches, because we think so quickly, we're so smarty pants, we're making all of these connections about a client in our head so quickly that we forget that they're not making those connections too. And we need to slow down and help them connect the dots. So it's not about how fast or slow you speak, but it's about the process and giving your client enough time and space so that dots can be connected for them. Tell me what you're hearing that's important for you.
That all makes sense. And my mind does race. You know, if my mouth doesn't keep up with my mind, and I'm always trying to make it keep up usually, but it doesn't work that way. I feel like I can sometimes be verbally abrupt when mentally I'm not. Like my words and voice don't convey what's really going on in my head accurately. And I feel like I could come off short when that's really not my intention.
Uh-huh.
So I'm trying to be aware and learn better skills.
Yeah. So that,
no one's ever told me this. This is just my guess.
So. So bring this to your coaching partner practice.
Okay.
On your next session, two things. So first of all, I want you to play with this while you're coaching your partner. And again, I want you to do you. So this isn't about being fake, but what you're talking about, I think, isn't out of integrity to shift. It's that you're...
No, it's just improving.
Yes. So I want you to really play with this in the coaching. And then when you have your breakdown time after the coaching, I want you to ask your partner, you tell her this is something that you're working on, and I want you to ask her as the client, how was it for her in terms of your pacing? Were you abrupt? Did you feel like you gave enough space? And you can also tell her how you think you did. Like, just break that down a bit afterwards. Really use the partner space to practice that.
Good. That's good. I hadn't even thought of that.
Yeah, I think that'll be a really powerful thing for you to play with. And then again, for you and for everyone, again, just this reminder to always connect the dots, because what's happening in our minds is not necessarily as fast as our client is going.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you.
You are very welcome. Great question. Great stuff, everybody. I have so enjoyed our first clinic call. It's wonderful. I hope that you received a lot. You got what you needed. We can continue these conversations in our Facebook group. And I'll be with all of you tomorrow. We're going to have our listening practicum. And it's I love the practicums. It's an opportunity to practice and get feedback. And we'll be going a lot deeper with listening skills. So until then, I'm sending you all a big hug. I'm thinking about you. And I will talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
The moderator has left the